under. But you're probably right. Chapter 2 of Philippians. Chapter 2. Thank you for braving the brutal winter conditions to do the Bible class. Let's pray together. We are so grateful, Father, that we have this time to be in this comfortable place and to think about this great letter you have preserved for us. May we understand what you were trying to say and see its relevance to the things that we're trying to do for you in this place. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.
Would this be a good time to remind us that we are reading a letter? Actually, somebody else's mail, to be honest. Paul's letter to his good friends at Philippi. I thought about that because we've kind of been going through these segments. And I think that's one of the things we do sometimes that causes us to chop up these letters into these digestible bites and miss the whole picture. So can I just go back briefly and remind you at least where we are, where we've come from a little bit. Remember that we really kind of got into the meat of this with chapter 1. In verse 27, where we had the table of contents laid out for us. And said, really, it appears from what Paul says at the end of 1, the kind of two main things he's working on at Philippi. There's an internal issue and an external problem that he wants to address with them. And so in chapter 2, he starts working on this internal conflict that they're having. And he does that in two ways. In the first four verses, he talks about these attitudes that we need to get along with each other. If you look back to chapter 1 and verse 27, remember he said that I want to hear that you're standing firm in one spirit with one mind, striving together for the faith of the gospel. That's sort of an upbeat way of saying I don't want y'all to be fussing with each other. I want y'all to get along, do this work together. And then what he does in 1 through 4 is he talks about the character, the disposition necessary to pull that off. Because to be unified is really about who you are, about your character. And then the next thing he will do is what? Can you answer that question? It's what we did last week. Don't break my heart.
Talking about the servant attitude.
Yeah, but what does he do to talk about the servant attitude?
Compares to Christ.
Yeah, okay, so thank you. You didn't break my heart tonight. In 5 through 11, he points to Jesus, right? And he says, Jesus is the example of what I want you to be and how I want you to think. Have this attitude in you, he says in verse 5, which was also in Christ Jesus. And he didn't just pick Jesus generally, he focuses on one specific thing Jesus did. What is it? What's 5 through 11 about?
His death.
Yeah, it's about his sacrificial death on the cross. See, I really think he's hitting hard here. Because he didn't just say, y'all need to be like Jesus. He's saying, y'all need to imitate Jesus in the most important thing that anyone ever did for humanity. Jesus did this for you. So, you need to do this for each other, right? Don't lose sight of the fact, though, that he's working on this unity thing that they need, this problem that's dividing them. So he's introduced it, and he's told them what the characters they need to have. He's given them an example of Jesus, and I don't think we're done yet. This is chapter 2, verse 12. Our next segment we're going to read together. Watch for this unity issue. I think he's working on it here. Now, I'm going to read 12 through 18. I want to set this up a little bit for you before we read it. I think in these verses, there are three things that Paul is going to say, I want you to do. Okay? There's a lot of stuff around those, but mainly, there are three admonitions. You need to do this. And I want you to see if you can spot those as we go through, and then that'll be fun to see if we agree. Maybe you'll find some that I missed along the way. But look for three things Paul says I want you to do, and we'll compare our list when I get done. This is verse 12. So then, my beloved, just as you have always obeyed, not as in my presence only, but now much more in my absence, work out your salvation with fear and trembling. For it is God who is at work in you, both to will and to work for his good pleasure. Do all things without grumbling or disputing, so that you will prove yourselves to be blameless and innocent children of God, above reproach in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation, among whom you appear as lights in the world, holding fast the word of life, so that in the day of Christ I will have reason to glory, because I did not run in vain or toil in vain. But even if I am being poured out as a drink offering upon the sacrifice and service of your faith, I rejoice and share my joy with you all. You too, I urge you, rejoice in the same way and share your joy with me. All right, that's our segment tonight. I suggested that Paul, well, let's put it this way, at least tells them three things I want you to do. And Randy would be disappointed with me right now. I want to see if you can match my list, right? I'm looking for some answers. But hey, if you miss my list, I'll put yours on my list too. Fire away. What?
Do all things without grumbling.
Okay. In verse 14, do all things without grumbling or disputing. Okay? That's something he tells them to do.
Verse 12, work out your salvation with fear and trembling.
All right. Verse 12. Work out your salvation.
Blameless and harmless without rebuke.
Blameless and harmless without rebuke. Where do you see that?
15.
Gainer, that didn't make my list, but I'll put it up here anyway. Because that's a B, not a do in my dictionary. But we'll work with it anyway.
Hold fast, sir.
Hold fast. Where do you see that?
The word of life. 16. Did you have that one?
I didn't.
Oh.
Verse 18.
Holding fast.
Kind of guess to what the teacher's thinking.
I know. Isn't it terrible? Isn't it terrible? Randy would be so disappointed with me.
Be glad and rejoice.
Verse 18.
Sure, okay. Right. Verse what?
18.
Rejoice. Give me all of it.
Be glad and rejoice.
Okay. And?
Share.
Share your joy.
Did you have that one?
Yes. I'm looking for do commands. And so my list was work out your salvation, do all things without grumbling and disputing, rejoice and share your joy, though these are going to wrap into what we said anyway. Okay? It's just our list. Not fretting over what belongs and what doesn't. I wanted you to see those three admonitions, though, because I think they become sort of like an outline for this segment and help us follow what Paul says. And so what I want you to do with me tonight is just kind of walk through this with me, and let's think about what we see. Starting with verse 12, because that's actually the beginning of our segment, work out your salvation. That verse begins in my translation with, so then. How does your verse 12 begin?
Therefore.
Which makes you want to do what?
Well, what it's there for.
Yeah, what was that there for, right? That's exactly right. So I am inspired before I go. And see, we need this because we don't want to look at this in isolation. And Paul's not letting us. He's saying, so then, which makes us say, wait. What did you just say? What did he just say? What's before verse 12?
Everybody's going to confess.
Sorry?
Everyone's going to confess.
Yes, yes. What's the whole segment before verse 12?
Be like Christ.
Be like Jesus. Specifically in what way?
Sacrifice.
Have that sacrificial, humble, serving spirit. And what's before that? I left it up there for a reason.
The attitude.
You have those attitudes like I'm showing you in Jesus. And all of that actually goes back up to 127 when he said, I want you guys to strive together. Right? I want y'all to be one. So, all of that leads up to, so then, I'm kind of struck with how chapter 2 and verse 12 sounds a lot like chapter 1 and verse 27. Would you look at those two verses, 127 and 212? Can you see that they're kind of alike?
Whether I'm there or not.
Twice he talks about this present and absent, right? So whether I'm with you or not, I want to hear that you're striving together. And so he gets to 12 and he says the same thing. As you've always obeyed, not only in my presence, but also in my absence, that leads up to that. The other thing that I think is going on, if you look back to 127, remember you started out with, conduct yourself in a manner worthy of the gospel of Christ, which I think was the big idea, right? That's the big idea. You guys need to be like Jesus, right? And he's heading somewhere with that. Specifically, I want y'all to be united. I want y'all to love each other and be one, right? You demonstrate that conduct in your relationship. And so I think that's the same thing that's going on in 12. The big idea is work out your salvation. And then when he gets down to 14, he's going to do something specific like that. It's kind of like when you say to your kids, you guys behave yourself. And what I mean is, don't touch him again. Quit talking mean to each other. Don't get his stuff. You see, the big idea is behave. The detail is the list, right? And I think that's what Paul is doing here. The big idea is walk in a manner worthy of the gospel. And now he comes back to it again. Work out your own salvation. What does that mean to y'all, that language? Because I think that's probably some of the most familiar language in the book. It's one of the memorable phrases from Philippians. Work out your salvation. Yes, sir.
There's only one other person that knows each of us as well as we know ourselves, and that's the Lord. And so I don't know what's in your mind and your inner thoughts and how you think about things specific. I can look at you and I can talk to you and I can get some general ideas, but I don't know really what's going on sort of in behind the scenes. And I think what Paul's trying to get us to see here is that, you know, those inner thoughts, those inward things that you're thinking about, those need to align to God first, because once you get that aligned with God, then the unity becomes much easier to work through, because now you're focused on him and not on selfishness or self-centeredness.
Thank you. Interesting. Does tie back to what he says in 3 and 4, doesn't it? Those character things have to come first. Work out your salvation. Anyone else want to weigh in on that? What do you think that means?
I think he wants you to think about what it means to have salvation and what they've been saved from and saved to do.
Ooh, which one?
Both.
Well, saved to do is curious to me because... Doesn't verse 13 seem to lock in well with that idea of saved to do something with you? Because he says, for it is God who is at work in you both to will and to work to his good pleasure. So it sounds like God is currently doing something with me. Interesting. Yes, sir.
The thing that comes to mind is, not a here it is, it's just, you know, you got it, you got to do something with that. So it's an action on your part to assure your salvation. So it's not, again, it's not just a grace thing or just a mercy thing. It's all of that plus you doing something.
I wondered, Anthony, if there aren't two ways to see salvation. Follow this, and y'all push back, and you think I've got this wrong. But there is an initial moment where we are saved, right? When I am immersed, I die in the watery grave, and I'm raised to a new life. And at that moment, I can say, I am saved, right? But there's a second way to look at salvation, where all of that really culminates ultimately at the end with what? With what?
God.
With God. Thinking time, though.
Death.
With death?
Judge. Well, judgment.
I was thinking more positively that. With heaven, right? Isn't it also true that ultimately our salvation reaches its end when we're at home with God, with heaven? Y'all buy that too? What's happening in the middle between the moment and when we're with him in heaven? What's happening?
The work.
Yeah, work to do.
We're working out our salvation. As verse 13 tells us, he's continuing to work on us. Jesus would describe it as a road we travel, not a resort we vacation in. We're traveling a narrow way that leads to life. We're constantly in this process of growing and maturing and being molded in the image of his son, which again, if you look at verse 13, for it is a God who is at work with you in you. God is continuing to make us who he wants us to be, right? And so when he says work out your salvation, I think that's the idea. To see yourself as an unfinished project that God's still working on. I think that's the big idea. And I think once he sells them on that, then he's going to hit them with some specifics, right? What do you think he's going to tell them? What are the specifics going to be?
Don't grumble.
Yeah. Specifically, God needs to do some molding on your grumbling and disputing issues that you're having, right? But that's all part of letting him work and make us into who he wants us to be. Now think about that and remember that at the very beginning of the letter, Paul said to him in verse 121, for to me, remember it? What's the rest of it? To live is?
Christ.
Christ. And to die?
Is gain.
You see it? So it's that in-between part between initial salvation and the culmination of our salvation that God is forming us and making us into who he wants us to be. I almost missed this, and I was looking back at this today. I thought, we ought to at least comment on fear and trembling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you.
Jump on it. Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to ask you about
that. Do it with fear and trembling.
I view that as there's risk.
And so I need more. Tell me what you're thinking when you say that.
You need to live as Christ or else. I hate to say that.
No. Because
that should be the goal.
I think what he's saying is, and by the way, if you don't let God continue to do his work, yeah, there are consequences. By the way, it never dawned on me that this is a great passage to argue against one saved, always saved. Because what he's saying is if you don't let God finish this process that he's involved in with you, then you need to be afraid, right? And so it's almost like he twinges this positive admonition and he drops this little warning in there too. Like you said, or else. Exactly right. Yes, Brandon.
I was going to put it a little bit differently. I kind of look at that as a healthy respect. It kind of means the same thing that Craig was talking about. But I think it takes it a little bit further. Not only should I be fearful that God would destroy me if I did do it, but I need to respect his authority and his power and his sovereignty, because that leads me again to where I need to be as a servant of God.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Let me leave you with this thought.
Thank you, Andrew.
Listen, you're going to have to holler at me
because
you're in the wrong spot. No peripheral vision back there. Go ahead.
Christ said in the parable of the talents, he said, this is what my kingdom is like. You're going to be responsible for the talents. What you're given.
That's exactly right. Let me ask you to ponder this. And wrestle with this as a takeaway from class. Am I letting God finish with me? I think sometimes we end up being spiritual adolescents. We were born again and we started our walk, but we never grew up. And by the way, I think a lot of the struggles among God's people are the result of spiritual adolescence. We never matured in forming ourselves like Christ, which is why we struggle to get along with each other. The answer to that, go back to verses 3 and 4, is grow up. Put on these characteristics of Christ. So with that in mind, bump down now to 14, 15, and 16, the next little piece of this, because as I said, what I think he's doing is, the big idea is keep letting God work on you and make you who you want to be. Make you who he wants you to be, right? Want to do what he wants us to do, be who he wants us to be. That's verse 13. But then in 14, I think he gets to his point, which is, yeah. How come I keep thinking Yodi and Syntyche when I read that? Right? Because they're coming in four. We know that because we've already read the letter all the way through. That's coming. There's some kind of a problem in this church here. And I have to tell you, I think until I really get some time to read the book carefully, I don't know. I appreciate how big the problem was. And I think evidently it wasn't a little thing. I think it's a big thing that's hampering the congregation.
Because they started out good, obviously.
Yes. And there's a part of me that says, I kind of want to know some more about what the feud was. I don't know. Maybe that's a bad impulse to me. It sounds like a gossip impulse coming out of me. But I'm kind of curious as to what was going on with these two sisters. And so I think what he's saying is, and especially the grumble part. Maybe there's some gossiping going on, or they're kind of griping to each other. The disputing I get, I'm curious about that one. But that seems to me where he's going. Y'all got to quit fussing with each other, right? Heard I see a hand. Yes, sir.
Well, I think it's a good thing that he did not say, it's not explained what it is, because now you can put it on any dispute that happens.
That's right.
You know, so would understand that Paul wants us to not be together. That's the whole idea. Coming from, especially what you emphasized in that point, that's the whole idea of this letter. So, if I say it's this, we got to focus on just that. Oh, in this case, you do this. But when he leaves it open like that, you can go anywhere with that and say it's a dispute. It's not being together.
Right.
It's not being in harmony, and we need to be in those areas.
Okay. You need to let Christ make you into the kind of people who can get along with each other, right? I think that is what he's saying. Now look at 15 and 16, because it's a curious addition that goes right after that, right? If we are correct, and what he's really driving at here is, I want you guys to be at peace with each other. Talk to me about what he says in 15 and 16. Look at those two verses. How does that teaching in 15 and 16 connect to this bigger idea that you guys need to get along with each other? Which is?
So in the first part of the verse, you know, he's talking about you can't do the grumbling and the disputing. That's God would view that as sinful, just call it what it is. On the other side of that coin, he's saying you need to be blameless and innocent. So this is what you're doing. This is what you need to be doing. That's not right. This is what's right. So he's contrasting. I think he's creating a contrast for them to see that, oh yeah, I did say that bad thing about her. That probably wasn't a good thing. So that, I'm not blameless anymore. And I think that's the point he's trying to drive at.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
I think in the greater context, you're showing, if you're showing Christ by this behavior, you're there to be the light in the world. Because that's not how the world acts.
So I am, I'm wondering, because remember, if we went back to chapter 1, Paul has had a lot to say about mission, right? Remember, we looked at his summary of his circumstances, and it was all about mission. And now I wonder if he was setting them up to say this to them. You know, you're feuding and you're fussing is impeding the mission. You need to be a light to the world, but you actually look like the world in your behavior toward each other, which is distracting you from the mission. But frankly, people from the outside looking in are not going to see Christ in you. So I almost wonder, this was my speculation about 15 and 16, he's talking about the broader impact of their behavior beyond Yodia and Syntyche and people in the church who are discouraged by that. He's talking about the whole mission. We know we're supposed to be holding fast the word of life. Paul says, I don't want to have wasted my effort on you. But that would be the consequence if they let themselves get consumed with this grumbling. He wrote that to the Galatians. Y'all remember that in Galatians 5? If you bite and devour one another, take care lest you be consumed by each other. And thus destroying the work that Paul had done there. By the way, just pause for a second. Do we have any takeaways for me and you in that? Any application thoughts from that warning? Yes, ma'am.
Well, he points out the fact that it's God working in you. You don't need to have any pride in this. And that's where a lot of dispute comes from.
It is. You're right about that. It's the pride that gets us. He's warned about it. Thank you. Any other thoughts about that? Lessons for us in that? Yes, sir.
One thought I had was that if you've ever been mad at somebody, of course it never happens to me at all, but one of the things I've learned about myself is that if I'm going to stay mad at someone, I gotta work at it. It's interesting about anger, because anger isn't something that just naturally stays there. I mean, you gotta work yourself up into anger, and then you gotta keep it hot. And that takes a lot of effort and a lot of energy to keep it hot. And I think, you know, the grumbling that's going back and forth, the feuding, they're feeding in, and they're keeping their anger hot with each other. And so they're taking their focus off of what God wants them to do, and they're putting it on the dispute that they're having with one another, which is taking away from the mission that Paul is talking about.
Yeah. Yes, ma'am.
Well, your own hurt feeds.
It does. Yeah, you're right about that. I wonder too, have you ever found that when you were embroiled in controversy with someone, your vision narrows? Yeah. And what I mean by that is, that's all you see with the controversy you have with someone. I have literally witnessed husbands and wives completely lose their vision because they are consumed with the battle they're having with each other and don't realize that their children are standing there watching and listening. And we get that tunnel vision on this issue and sometimes don't appreciate the collateral damage. And I can't help but wonder if that's what Paul is doing in 15 and 16, is saying, you know, it's not just these two sisters. It's a church family, and it's the world we're trying to reach, all of which is being impacted by this. And I think especially when we're just kind of talking about internal fussing, which is usually a lot about personalities and opinions and preferences, a really great question to pause and ask yourself is this worth it? Is this really worth going to war over? In fact, I've made myself, because I messed up with this so many times, if something happens to the church family I'm upset about, I make myself sleep on it for 24 hours before I say anything. I'll text anybody, I'll talk to anybody except Heidi, who encourages me to sleep on it 24 hours. And I'll do anything for 24 hours. And the reason I do that is I've discovered this thing. About 80% of the time, if I sleep on it, I'm in a different place the next night. And about 80% of the time, I'm in the place where I'm like, okay, that wasn't that big a deal. I should probably just let it go.
All that takes you back to 12, fear and trembling.
Yeah.
Because that should start worrying you. What are you doing? What am I doing?
Right. Exactly. And I don't think in the moment we see that. Because it's tunnel vision, right? And so I think one of the things that he does here is he broadens that out. He says, look at the bigger picture. And I do think sometimes as brothers and sisters, we do not see how our petty fussing discourages the family and hampers the work of evangelism and hurts our influence in the community. I think we really need to ask, did we really need to battle over the carpet color? Just look at the ugly carpet and say, for the next 20 years, I know I was right about that.
And then we come on Sunday morning and we can't partake of the Lord's Supper.
Mm.
If I have something in my heart that has not been taken care of, I cannot partake of the Lord's Supper.
There will at least be some friction there for us, right? Some discomfort. All right, last thing, 17, 18. Share your joy with me. I had some difficulty, especially with 17. And I don't think it's that the text is unclear. It's just I see some possibilities. And I'll just confess, at the teaching of this class, I wasn't quite settled with what I decided about verse 17. But let me invite you to do this. Do you see the word joy in 17 and 18?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In fact, if we count rejoice,
right,
four times in two verses. So whose joy does he talk about in 17?
His joy.
Now, I'm not quite sure I was putting that together. That's where my question is. Part of me wonders if what he's saying in 17 is, I want you guys to remember that I'm in a big mess right now. Like, literally, where is he? In prison, right? I'm in a big mess right now, and I am rejoicing. That's chapter 1. And in writing to you, I'm sharing that joy with you guys. So whose joy does he talk about in 18? Their joy. So it's like what he's saying to them is, I want you to follow the golden rule here. Even in my mess, I see the joy and I'm sharing my joy with you. And what I want to do is I want you to see the joy and to share your joy with me.
David.
Yes, ma'am.
I keep going back to how they first met him, or some of these people first met him, you know, in prison, and he's singing. You know, they know he's been there before, and they're probably remembering.
Yeah, and it's interesting to me, if I could add on to your answer, that he leverages that relationship in this letter again and again and again. I want you guys to think about me. I think about how you feel about me, and you do for me what I'm doing for you, right? I think he uses it to get them to be.
Could it also be, it's kind of a words of encouragement? Don't let what's happening to me discourage you. Carry on.
Well, yes. Yeah, that is exactly right. That's exactly right. I think he wants them to carry on, Charles, in the midst of their adversity. And to be, can we even do this? Be joyous in their mess? Wow, that's a tough one. So let me offer a takeaway for us to kick around before we're done. We've just got a few minutes left. I wanted to ask you one other thing to think about as you go away from class, to consider the capacity you have to give joy to other people. It's interesting to me that there can be a temptation to talk about that in the opposite way, in the negative way, right? Remember that you can be a big discouragement to other people. But Paul keeps taking the high road here, and he doesn't leverage the negative, he leverages the positive. That's what he does in 17 and 18. Hey, I've given you joy, you guys give me joy. I want to hear that you're doing good. He's asking them for that. And so I'm going to do the same thing Paul does. I'm going to invite you to consider the opportunities that we have to give other people joy. And I wonder if we think about that very much. I will say to you that every one of you is impacting someone. People you don't realize you're impacting. And that impact gives you the opportunity to give them joy. Just a couple of examples of that. I'm encouraged that some people are here. And I'm especially encouraged by people who are going through adversity. And they're here. And I have to tell you that I've had some compliments paid to me that I'm sure the person who said it, it was just a kind word being exchanged, but I've carried it for years. I am influenced today by compliments I was given years ago. And I'm this is gonna mess you up. I celebrate some failures. I find joy in some failures, and particularly by failures managed courageously. I have a good friend years ago that cheated on his wife with a man years ago. He was a deacon. It was a scandal. It was followed by an ugly divorce, and this guy's life was destroyed, his fault. And that was decades ago. And you know what he's done? Man, this guy's just kept on serving the Lord. Knows he's going to be single the rest of his life. He's accepted that. Got busy raising his kids. He was a beautiful song leader. And at one point, we tried to reintroduce him. And some people got real upset about that. You know what he said? I don't want to introduce worship. Don't put me on the list. And then we all decided after that he needed to be on the list, right? He's still serving God today. I take so much joy in seeing his victory. Could you guys think of people, don't list them, who give you joy that way? Do you think of examples in your life? So I wanted to think about that because that's, I think, what Paul is talking about in 17 and 18. I invite you to consider your capacity to give joy to somebody else. And it may not even be someone you realize. You won't know all the people that you touch and give joy to all the time. And you may not even know what it is that you're doing, but just something about you that they've noticed and it lifts them up and gives them joy. We have the wonderful capacity to do that. That's celebrated by Paul in this letter. I think it's something we need to ponder more than we do. Did you ever hear that? I missed somebody. Anyway, we're going to work this next segment. Actually, Andrew's going to work this next segment with you. I better get this right, Andrew, right? 19 through 30. Am I right about that? 19 through 30. And that will finish up this section on getting along with each other. And I'm going to move on and talk about some of this doctrinal controversy. Any questions or comments about the rest of that? You may want to add on. All right. Yes, sir. Oh, there he got in.
I hadn't thought about it until you said what you did, but everybody would know. Paul wasn't ashamed to say he was the chief among sinners. And so they would know where he came from, you know, how he had persecuted the church. And that's got to be a victory that he's proud of. And he can relate to people who are struggling like
He is a great example that it doesn't matter where you are, does it, isn't it? Or what you've done. You can you can do better and you can inspire other people. Thank you. All right. See you guys next Wednesday.